When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Crossover Daily, SI's daily NBA podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Nadkarni. Today on the show, we'll be discussing the NBA Finals, what a title would mean to LeBron's fans in Los Angeles, and we'll break down all the drama going on with the Clippers. Joining me with The Athletic's Jovan Buha, let's start the show. All right, joining me now on Crossover Daily is a tall drink of water who happens to cover the LA Clippers for The Athletic. He's my fellow resident on Millennial Island. Please welcome to the show, Jovan Buha. Jovan, how's it going, my man?
How's it going? Running on some fumes. It's been a crazy 24, I guess now like 30-ish hours in Clipperland, but otherwise I'm doing well.
Good to hear. There's definitely... obviously much to discuss with the Clippers, and I think there's a lot of meat in that bone, and I want to get there for sure. Of course, you know, by the time people listen to this, the NBA Finals will be starting in a few hours. I know you didn't cover the Lakers or the Heat. I also know that you watch plenty of basketball. You're obviously, just by being in LA, even covering the Clippers, you have a proximity to the Lakers. What are your kind of initial thoughts on the Finals matchup?
I think it's a really good matchup. You know, I think that in many ways, you know, neither team has kind of faced this level of challenge, and that makes sense, you know, the Finals matchup. But I think Miami is the best equipped team to defend the Lakers in terms of just their playoff path. And if you kind of look at going through Portland, Houston, and Denver, all three of those teams were subpar defensively. And when looking at Miami's personnel, you know, with Bam Adebayo, who I think might be the best Anthony Davis matchup in the league right now, then looking at the wave of wings that they have, Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala, even a guy like Solomon Hill, who you can maybe throw out there for a few minutes for wing defense. Like, I do think Miami is going to present a lot of problems for the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers are obviously the favorites, and, I think a lot of people are going to pick them in five games, maybe even four games. But I do think that Miami, with their shooting, with the coaching of Eric Spoelstra, with the funky zone, and then some of their defensive personnel, which the Lakers haven't really seen yet. You know, the Lakers, I think, have had really clear advantages at the LeBron and AD spots in all three series leading into the Finals. And, they're always going to have those advantages because those guys are two top five players. But I do think Miami can make it tougher for them than it's been so far. So that to me is kind of the chess match I'm most interested in. It's just kind of how Miami approaches those two and what they're able to do, because I do think they have the personnel to make it at least a little tough.
That's a great point. I mean, that's really been the theme of our podcast, I think, for the last 3 or 4 days now. Just the Heat are built more so than any other team to give the Lakers the kind of challenge they haven't gotten so far during the playoffs. You know, the Lakers have just played, frankly, three, you know, varying degrees of bad defenses en route to the finals. So I think that's going to be really interesting. I'm curious, you know, I think you and I probably would both admit heading into this season, we were really looking forward to a Lakers-Clippers playoff matchup. And obviously that didn't happen. And throughout the season, it felt like both sides were doing their best to kind of downplay the rivalry. You know, I think the Clippers maybe took some subliminal shots or thinly veiled shots with some of the billboards they put up around town, and kind of their marketing campaign, I think, was maybe targeted a little bit at the kind of the glitz and the glamour of the Lakers. Did you ever believe that the two teams didn't consider this a rivalry? Because I always thought that they were just kind of lying. Like, neither of them wanted to give the other one material. I'm curious your thoughts on that. It felt like both sides really tried hard to play down the rivalry this year.
It's difficult to kind of discern what's a rivalry and what's not, right? Like, right. You know, these days, they feel so rare, and you still have the all-time rivalries, you know, Lakers, Celtics, UNC, Duke, on and on. But, you know, I definitely think there's animosity here. There's been animosity here since really the Knicks-Chris Paul trade. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was, you know, someone who is an LA native, and that was around the time I started covering the league and started going to games and covering the Lakers and Clippers. And, you know, that to me was the thing that amped it up was, you know, it looked like for a few hours there, Chris Paul was going to be the heir apparent to Kobe Bryant and kind of help him in the last act of his career and maybe win a couple championships. And all of a sudden he was rerouted to the Clippers. And that to me was really the catalyst of what started this back and forth through the decade, because this has been ongoing. You know, it was happening again, like with the Lob City Clippers versus Kobe and Powell a little bit. And then you had those stretches there where the Clippers were the clearly better team. And they really got up for those games. You know, there were several times they beat the Lakers by like 40 points, and they were really trying to embarrass them because of just the LA dynamic. And then this season, we had some really good, you know, Laker Clipper games, opening night, Christmas Day, the game right before the hiatus. And then, you know, the first seeding game in bubble, like those were all for the most part, like pretty good games that came down to the wire. So I think we were robbed of that. That probably would have been the best series of all. I do think with all the Clippers' flaws, they would have really gotten up for that series. You would have seen whatever the best possible version of this Clippers team could have been, you would have seen it in that series. So I think for all of us basketball fans out there, it's unfortunate that we weren't able to see that.
The animosity is something that's a great point. You know, it's funny. I remember I was talking to someone in the Clippers organization once, and not even really talking about the rivalry, but I made a comment about how, you know, the Clippers and the Lakers are similar in that they just took advantage of the fact that they wanted, you know, superstars wanted to play in Los Angeles, right? And the Clippers person like really took offense to that. They were like, you know, we built our team way differently than the Lakers ever did. You know, we had to make us an attractive destination in the way the Lakers didn't, which I think is a good point. You know, if LeBron wanted to play in LA, he would have signed with a so-so Lakers team as he did, you know, a million years before he would have signed with what was at the time a successful Clippers team. So that animosity is definitely something that I think exists. And I'm glad you brought that up. You know, how much of a, and I want to get to your story soon. Obviously the Clippers fired Doc Rivers this week. You had a great story about it in The Athletic that everyone, if you're listening to this podcast, you should check out. I'm curious though, how much of a missed opportunity do you think the Clippers feel like they have right now? Because I got the sense that the organization, like you said, they were really looking forward to a chance to sticking it to the Lakers this year.
I think it's a huge missed opportunity. You know, I think it might be a necessary one in that it might force, you know, I think it is forcing the organization to look at itself in the mirror and really self-reflect and examine what went wrong this season. I do think that at times they tried to patch over the process and really look more so towards the results. And you know, this team had that talent that, you know, on any given night, they could beat anybody, right? Like they had that ceiling on a night to night basis, but they weren't very consistent. You know, clearly there were some chemistry, you know, locker room issues to some extent. And, you know, I think ultimately, you know, they collapsed in the fashion that they did because they weren't connected and they weren't on the same page. And also I think Doc Rivers clearly failed to push the right buttons in the, you know, in the postseason. And as I reported today, you know, one more recent kind of point of contention was him continuing to play Montrezl Harrell over Ivica Zubats, despite all of the lineup data and, you know, most of, or at least a lot of the staff internally kind of being like, Ivica Zubats at this point is the more productive player. All the signs point to that. Like, why is he not playing more? And Doc continued to kind of play Trez despite the Clippers badly getting outscored when he was on the floor in the playoffs. So, you know, I think there was a lot of factors that went into it, but, you know, I ultimately think it could end up being a blessing in disguise where had they beaten Denver, you know, I think they would have lost to the Lakers, but, you know, who knows, maybe they get by the Lakers, maybe they win the title, but I think that would have masked some of the deeper issues that they needed to address and resolve. And this might have been the wake-up call of, you know, I do think there's going to be changes. You know, obviously there's going to be a new head coach, but I do think they're going to make some changes to the roster. And I think this could maybe end up saving this core and putting them in a better position moving forward.
So, you know, you brought up, obviously you've been covering not just the Clippers, but basketball for a long time. You've been in LA. You're an LA native. At the end of last season, you know, I think Kawhi Leonard had really, you know, taken control of the best player in the NBA narrative, right? He had defeated the Warriors. You know, it was a hobbled version of the Warriors, but defeated nonetheless. You know, Finals MVP, kind of really put himself back on the map after kind of a weird exit in San Antonio. And I think headed into this season, which was a year ago now, a lot of people were giving Kawhi that edge over LeBron in terms of best player in the game. And, you know, I think that the narrative has kind of flipped on its head in the playoffs. Now people are questioning why LeBron didn't receive enough MVP votes, even though, you know, Giannis was a very deserving MVP. Just in terms of the landscape for LA, you know, LeBron, when he got to the Lakers, I think there was still a segment of the fan base that kind of felt like he needed to prove that he was going to be one of the stalwarts of this franchise and not just kind of a mercenary to some extent. What do you think this run has done for LeBron in the Los Angeles basketball conversation?
Well, I think, you know, if the Lakers do end up winning the title, I think he immediately joins the all-time Laker greats. And you know, you look at a guy like Wilt Chamberlain, who I think most people, I don't know who people associate with him. I think there are a lot of people who probably associate him with the Lakers just because, you know, it's the Lakers and right. They're the most famous team. But, you know, he did play a lot of his time with the Warriors and in Philly. And, you know, so I think that could be kind of like, but he wasn't in LA that long. He was only in LA for a few years. So I think it, when you look at, you know, how LeBron's career is probably going to play out, he probably is going to be with the Lakers, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 years tops. But if he does deliver a championship or two championships or, you know, three, whatever, you know, he clearly rises those ranks and he's never going to be Kobe Bryant or Shaquille O'Neal or Jerry West or Magic. You know, those guys were just in LA for such a big part of their career. Mm-hmm. But I do think now, like, you know, this run was special. You know, it's not over yet, but you know, just bringing LA from not being in the postseason to bringing them to the finals. And I think doing so in the way he has and really embracing the Lakers, you know, franchise, you know, kind of putting it on his back. I think his relationship with Kobe has been something that's been dissected a lot this season, obviously with the tragic passing of Kobe and kind of LeBron candidly, you know, dedicating the season to Kobe and kind of talking about that throughout the season. And you know, I think just him sort of embracing Laker fans and Laker culture and really kind of honoring the franchise and you know, in that way, I think that has really endeared him to Laker fans. And you know, most of my friends are Laker fans, and I to your point, like I have seen that shift with them where last season it kind of was that feeling out process. And there were those murmurs of, you know, is LeBron past his prime? You know, can he deliver a championship? Can he take a team to the finals? And of course, we don't want to sell, you know, AD short of what he's done because he's arguably been their best player, I think, in this postseason run.
Right.
You know, you could go back and forth between the two. But, you know, at the end of the day, LeBron is the leader. He's LeBron. And, you know, I think he definitely there has been a big shift from year one to year two. And if the Lakers win the title, which again, I think they're going to be heavily favored in this series. Like I think he does vault into that kind of tier with Wilt Chamberlain and kind of that second tier of Laker greats and with the potential to rise even higher.
It really is fascinating to see how LA fans have embraced LeBron only because, you know, I think from the outside, and I think you would agree with this too, the Lakers just seem constructed in such a, and we've touched on this on the podcast too, they're constructed in such a mercenary-like manner with the vets they brought in, first-year coach, it's just a lot different from what we're seeing in most places around the league right now. And it really is kind of a, in some ways, a last gasp of the super team era, where you're just, you know, bringing a bunch of guys together, almost Dirty Dozen style, and kind of foregoing traditional team building. But, you know, that doesn't make one right or one wrong. It's obviously been really effective for the Lakers. And here they are, very close to winning a championship. I want to get to the Clippers. You know, you wrote an article today, that a real deep dive into what happened with Doc Rivers, which I think caught most of us, even yourself, I think fair to say, by surprise. Give us like the, you know, the nuts and bolts here. Why did this happen? You know, what exactly happened, and what's going to happen next?
Yeah, so I was stunned, just like everybody else. I was in my kitchen when I got the Woj alert, and then it, you know, immediately started putting in, you know, texts and calls. And you know, I think on its face, it's not necessarily surprising. You know, losing a 3-1 lead in that fashion, you know, having three, you know, consecutive double digit leads, you know, twice in the second half of those games. To lose in that manner, I think for any coach would potentially be a fireable offense. But then when you look at Doc's body of work in LA, you know, while there are a lot of things off the court you have to recognize and honor, like he made this franchise legitimate, and mm-hmm. he helped them during the Donald Sterling saga. And he was arguably the most outspoken coach on racial and social issues in this country. And, you know, he had that amazing speech, you know, during the playoffs. And it's just like, he's been a great ambassador for the franchise, a great face of the franchise and voice for the franchise. But on the court, you know, the Clipper teams have been disappointing relatively mm-hmm. in the postseason. And, you know, he was very successful in Boston, won a championship, made the finals, also made the conference finals. And, you know, I think he's kind of almost been living off of that run to mm-hmm. to some extent, where, you know, looking at the results in LA, they've never gotten out of the second round. And that Lob City team, you know, that 5-year stretch is the best winning percentage to never make a conference finals. And yeah. for him to be at the helm of that and have that 3-1 collapse against Houston in 2015, and then to be at the helm again in 2020, like, I just think at some point there were some questions internally of, is this the right coach? You know, is he the right guy to lead us? And, you know, with the way the Clippers, you know, you're mentioning mercenaries and team building and stuff, like, this is a pretty short window for them, right? Like, it could be a longer window. You know, Kawhi's 29, PG's 30, like, theoretically, those guys could play at a high level into their mid-30s, but they are in win-now mode. And for them right. to...
Their contracts are in win-now mode.
Exactly. They potentially have 1 year left. And for them to flame out the way that they did, it is putting a lot of pressure on next season, whether Doc was the coach or not. But I do think it expedited that process of, you know, mm-hmm. is Doc the right coach? Are we aligned in our vision moving forward? That was a big thing I was told, was just, you know, it was one thing to have the performance that he had, you know, as a Clippers coach, but, you know, in conversations with Steve Ballmer and them kind of looking at roster makeup and style of play and player development and kind of just the way they wanted to move forward, they were on two different pages. Right. And, you know, I think that was kind of the last straw. It wasn't necessarily losing to Denver. It wasn't right. even losing 2-3-1 series leads. It was more, when they were trying to diagnose what the issues were, mm-hmm. they were not diagnosing the same thing. They were not seeing the same issues. So I think that is where the Clippers lost some of that confidence of, like, he can be the guy to fix this. And right. if you're in a win now mode and you're not confident in that situation, that's where I think you have to move on. So that would be my kind of quickest way to explain that.
Well, you also had a great story that I believe you co-reported during the year about some of the chemistry issues in the locker room. And I think, you know, I'm not as plugged in with the Clippers as you are. I think we could sense it in terms of just, you know, they didn't practice together a lot. They didn't play together a lot. And those things do matter ultimately. Mm-hmm. What are some of the, you know, now there's been reports about, you know, where guys rolling their eyes at Paul George after he gave a speech, or, you know, you mentioned the Zubac Montrezl Harrell thing. can you give us any sense of what you know, maybe behind the scenes that also contributed to this? Like, would that, are those the kinds of things that might lead to some even bigger changes beyond Doc?
Certainly. You know, I reported that back in January that, you know, I talked to a bunch of people in and outside the locker room, with the team, around the team, and, you know, reported that with my colleague, Sam Amick. And, you know, it was, you know, basically characterized the way it played out. Like, this team was not on the same page. There was a lot of personality and ego conflict, and it wasn't any situation like a Kobe, Shaq, or Russ, KD, where there was like, you know, two big personalities butting heads in the locker room. It was just more so you did have that old guard of Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, last season's team, which was so fun, right? Like, you know, there was this underdog, gritty, tough group that no one picked to make the playoffs, yet they made the playoffs, pushed the Warriors to six games, won two games in Oracle Arena. And it was this fun, feel-good story. But then you kind of took that team and you were like, well, let's just add two superstars to this. And you know, kind of, it's just going to be plug and play. And, you know, we already have the role players. We already have the depth. Now we have the stars, and it's just going to mix and mesh. And last year's team was team first, so it's going to work. And that just wasn't the case. Like, it was, you know, they ran into a lot of, again, personality and ego differences. And, you know, I think some of the older players feeling like there's preferential treatment for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, which is understandable, right? Like, stars get preferential treatment, but I think it's different when the star is homegrown or someone that's been there for a bit versus adding someone in to a situation where you've already had, like, a lot of the rotation was there last year or the year before. These are guys that have been with the Clippers for a couple of years versus these new guys just coming in and getting all the star treatment. I think it did rub some people the wrong way. And, you know, I think if you look at the Clippers roster, their role players, you know, one of the strengths of them is they're very self-confident. You know, when you think of a guy like Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Marcus Morris, like, these guys, if you were ranking the confidence of role players in the league, I think all four of those guys would be in the top 10. Like, they are very self-confident. So having those guys with their own kind of egos and vision, kind of versions of themselves, like, now adding in Kawhi and PG, it can just be a little tricky to manage all that. And that was part of what I wrote in the story today, that, you know, there was a sense that at some point Doc did lose the locker room a little bit. You know, he lost control of how to manage those personalities, how to keep everybody happy. And I think when you look at how they collapsed and you look at blowing a 3-1 series lead in the fashion that they did, you can't help but think that team was not on the same page. They didn't have a leader in that locker room kind of righting the ship as they were unraveling. So I do think, you know, there's more that's going to come out. I'm going to report on more. Other people are going to report on more, like, you know, in the coming days and weeks. Like, I think there is more to the story. The short of it, I think, is just this team was never fully connected. And I think they are going to have to make some changes and probably bigger changes than people are anticipating.
Well, Jovan, we're looking forward to what else you have to report about this. I'm sure we'll have to have you back on the podcast to discuss about it, because I feel like there's going to be much more to talk about with the Clippers and LA in general coming soon. Thank you so much for taking the time to join the podcast, man. We really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.